This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Before I start the podcast, I need to send out a thank you message to all my wonderful patrons. These are people that have signed up to donate each month money to help support the podcast. I appreciate them so much. They are Sean Poole, David and Jennifer Evans, Jeff Ulmer, Sylvian Groth, Liz Brunson, Yetta, Steve Van Sack, Robert Brown, Rob Barnett, Bella Pori, John Munson, Betsy Hodges, Levi Peter, Elizabeth Brunson, Stephen Malio, Steve Rogers, Dale Hosack, Terry Smith, Chris Bloom, and Mary Thomas. Thank you guys for being part of this community. If you want to join Patreon, it's really easy. Go to patreon.com, search for Seth Lessing Bruce, and from there you can log on and sign up for as little as $1 a month. Doing that, you get a handwritten thank you note from me. At certain tiers, you get unedited episodes, you get preview episodes, and you also can join my advisory council. These are the group of supporters who get first notice of when I'm trying something new, and they are able to give us feedback on what they think of these new projects. So thank you guys for being part of this. Now then, let's get on with the conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Seth Lessing Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. We are getting off the Bruce train tonight, though I'm sure he will come up, as he often does. I have a new friend, Jennifer, joining me. Jennifer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Tell us a little about yourself.
I grew up in Wisconsin, and I moved to California in 2001. I have my BA in English and my master's in recreation. And my MEP, which is called My Unexpected Life, Finding Balance Beyond My Diagnosis, is about my journey after I'm diagnosed with a rare neuromuscular progressive disease at 17 in 1990. And Dave Matthews is part of that story.
I am looking forward to hearing all about that. And no, I'm going to save that. I'm going to save my statement for later. So when we get into more. So first off, Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me. Let's start out with, I always like to start at the beginning. You talked about growing up in Wisconsin. Talk about what kind of music was your family listening to?
My parents were mostly into the oldies, and Elvis was big in our house. But my siblings were all older than me, 12, 11, and 9 years older, to be exact. I really used music as a way to connect with them, because 12 years old, who wants their baby sister hanging around with them? I really paid attention to things they liked and tried to pick up certain things along the way.
Jennifer, what you're saying is a common theme. I've done over 1,000 episodes of these, and there are things that I see over and over again. And one of the things that I see is siblings are a big deal. If
Yeah.
you are the older, you influence your younger siblings, right?
Yes.
And if you, and then sometime the other end, if you're like, and then if you're a younger sibling, you are influenced by your older siblings. As you said, I want to be cool, I want to do, or because my older sibling was into classic rock, I really got into punk. Like sometimes it's the other way around, like you go for to find your own thing. What, why such a gap in age group with your siblings?
It was the second marriage for both
Okay.
of my parents, and my mother had three kids from her previous marriage, and they
Okay.
were all older.
Okay. Interesting. Very nice. So let's, as you started growing older, did you find your own choice in music, or was that siblings influencing stay pretty set with you?
Initially, I was pretty much into whatever my siblings were into, although my brother was much more into metal and heavy rock, and that never really caught on with me.
Okay.
And one of my sisters dabbled in things like the Sex Pistols and Bow Wow and a lot of, I guess, alternative things back in the 70s and early 80s. So I had knowledge of things like that. But for sure, I was like a 80s pop girl doing Huey Lewis in the News, Duran, Debbie Gibson, New Kids on the Block, all that
Sure.
until my junior year of high school when a friend of mine introduced me further to bands like The Cure and Depeche Mode and New Order and Violent Femmes and things like that.
Okay. Good. You mentioned that you were, did you talk about your education? Did you always wanted to be a to be involved in the arts, to be a writer, to do this?
Initially, I wanted to be a DJ
Okay, is that what you
or
want? Okay.
somebody on TV, even. I idolized the MTV VJs
Okay.
growing up. So I wanted to do that. Sorry, my dog is coming
What?
in the room.
Your dog wants to be on the podcast. That's okay. We
Yeah.
understand. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's fine.
So initially, I wanted to be a DJ or be a TV presenter, and my voice started getting worse.
Okay.
The cadence and the slur started to get worse, and obviously, if you want to be on the radio or TV, you need to have a pretty clear voice. So I knew that wasn't in the cards. So I switched to writing. But then also, I found out that I could book the bands that came to campus. And that really appealed to me. So that's That was my real introduction to the whole world of live music.
So that's interesting. You shared that you, when were you diagnosed with your disease?
I was 17.
Okay, and what happened? Tell me a little bit about that.
It's called Friedreich's ataxia. It's a form of muscular dystrophy,
Okay.
and it's progressive. Looking back, I probably had was started to have symptoms when I was about 13, but I didn't really start trying to find out what was going on until I was about 16.
Okay.
And I was just klutzy.
Okay.
I fell a lot. I didn't have great balance. My handwriting was getting difficult. But then I also had a difficulty. I noticed, like, walking in a straight line was becoming a challenge. And I didn't understand why.
Was it difficult for them to diagnose you, Jennifer?
It took about a year, which isn't a very long time compared to other people that whose diagnostic journeys have taken a lot longer. And the one thing, this was in 1990. There was no such thing as a genetic test, because it is genetic. Both my parents have the gene and pass it on to me. They just guessed based on their powers of deduction. I was genetically confirmed 10 years later when the test became available.
Because the reason why I ask, and I had a friend of mine who was starting to have issues, confused, couldn't remember where they parked their car, could not remember how to get home, things like that, and was going to, and a therapist said, we're going to have you tested, but I think you have early onset dementia. And when the test came back, the doctor's great news, you don't have dementia. And my friend was actually angry. What do you mean? Why? And this is, are you just saying that it's all in my head, that I'm just crazy? This is real. And the doctor said, no, just we still believe something's wrong. And the story goes that my friend was at a occupational therapist, right? Like trying to help them. And they saw like a scab. And they asked my friend, hey, what's that? And they go, oh, I fell off my mountain bike. And they said, oh, do you fall off your bike a lot? And my friend says, only three times where I broke my bike helmet. The rest of the times my helmet was fine, blocked it. And they said, holy crap. And they ended up being diagnosed with a brain trauma, similar to like a football player would have, that had so many concussions that they have problems putting together sentences sometimes. And they have good days and they have bad days, right? And the reason I'm telling this story, Jennifer, is that what frustrated my friend is not knowing. Knowing it, even if it's bad news, is better. 2017, I had been having stomach problems. My stomach would hurt. And so one day it was just unbearable. And I had gone to the doctor a couple of times and they had thought maybe, oh, maybe you just need a really good cleaning out or maybe just some other things. So my doctor said, go to the emergency room. So we go to the emergency room and the doctor said, okay, the first thing we got to do is we're going to clean out your stomach. And so they go, we think you have a tumor. And the next day, we think it's cancerous. And by the third day, it's you have a cancer, you have colon cancer. So I didn't have that. I'm fine by now. Thank you for, but I didn't have that time of worrying. And I would think that would be what was scary and frustrating, Jennifer, is I know something's wrong, right? It's not that I'm just being lazy and I can't write. When I write cursive, I can be lazy and it's like barely readable. But that's because I'm being lazy. Like I cannot walk straight sometimes because I'm clumsy. But you've got this, all these symptoms. So talk to me a little bit about your feelings about that, Jennifer, if you don't mind.
No, it was a little frustrating because my parents, I ended up going to one neurologist, a local neurologist, and he was a jerk,
Okay.
honestly, and he brushed it off. Oh, it's no big deal. And I was like, what do you mean it's no big deal? Yes, it's a huge deal. And eventually, my parents found another a specialist in Milwaukee, but they wanted me to wait until the school year ended to make the appointment because I guess maybe they had hoped I would suddenly be okay. And that school year was not my favorite,
Sure.
to say the least. And that's coincidentally the same year I really got into the Cure and Depeche Mode, partly because their lyrics weren't so fluffy and happy, and
Sure.
they had a little more depth, and their music was ethereal and
Yeah.
had a little more meaning behind it than pop.
Do you think part of the reason is because of what was going on in real life, you wanted something with a little edge?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had always, there had been a part of me that was like, I'm something about me is going to be a little different than everyone else. And I made sure of that.
Yeah, that's good. I know when you reached out to me, you talked about you wanted to visit about Dave Matthews Band. And there's a story behind that. So when I have someone on the podcast, like a Bruce fan or something, I will ask the question, when did you first become aware of Bruce? And what about his music spoke to you? So I'm going to ask the same thing about you, but feel free to take this wherever. When did Dave Matthews become something significant to you more than just someone's music you like?
I had him live once before, the whole band.
Okay.
But then I saw one of his acoustic shows and was able to meet him backstage, Long story short, 6 months later, I saw him again at a different show. This time he was with the whole band, but he remembered me, and I remember we had these passes, backstage passes, and the security people were clueless about where to send us. So
Okay.
basically, my friend and I were roaming around backstage at the World Amphitheater in Chicago. I don't
Okay.
know if it's called the World anymore.
Okay.
And he comes out of a doorway and he's, "Hey, I know you." And I was like, "Okay, me?"
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we basically, whenever I needed or wanted to go see a show, I let somebody who worked in the same agency as him, I let them know, and they hooked me up.
Okay. I'm reading the blurb about your book, and it said that you went through a tough time. When you're starting college and you've gotten your diagnosis, was there a transition for you? Was there a tough time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my freshman year in college was probably the most dramatic because I was caught up in drinking a lot, and I was caught up in a really toxic relationship. And even though in the back of my mind, I knew a lot better. I knew how it was going to turn out. There was part of me that always thought I was on a timetable and I had to experience whatever.
Did you feel that it is the idea that you felt like you were going to have? I've heard Mickey Mantle, the famous baseball player, talked about that his father died very young, his grandfather died very young. And he said if he had known he was going to live this long, he would have taken better care of his body. Was that part of it, that you were thinking that your life was going to be shorter, and so therefore you had to burn brightly?
Yes, that was definitely part of it. And I assumed that once I started using wheelchair,
Yeah.
no one would want me.
So one of the things that, and this is what I was going to talk about early, and I just said I was going to wait for it. One of the things I've seen, Jennifer, is sometimes when something unfortunate happens, that becomes the person's world and their sense of identity,
Yeah.
that I am my disease, or I was in a massive car wreck, and therefore that became I am not blank. I am the person that
Yeah.
survived this massive car wreck and how it changed my life. Do you feel like you were on that a little bit, but then got off of that path?
Yeah, I definitely think I let the disease define me.
Yes.
for a long time. It's part of my identity. I'm proud that it's part of my identity,
Sure.
but it's only part of it. It's not the whole picture.
Yeah. What is there a Road to Damascus moment, Jennifer, that made you flip that switch, or was it a longer process?
Again, I talk about this in the book,
I
but
figured you did. Yeah.
yes. But so I started working for the Wisconsin Coalition of Independent Living Centers
Okay.
in Wisconsin. And somebody, or my boss actually had this conversation with me about this thing called the social model of disability
Okay.
versus the medical model. So
Okay.
the medical model is basically you're broken, you need to be fixed.
Okay.
And the social model looks at you're fine the way you are. You're disabled, not necessarily because of your body or the way it reacts or what it can or cannot do. You're disabled because society isn't set up for everyone.
Yeah, and then also there is a, I'm guessing that seeing someone in a situation, whether it's a wheelchair or whatever, that immediately puts people in a certain mindset, correct?
Yes, and I know it did for me
Right.
when I was first diagnosed. It was right before Labor Day, which
Okay.
back in the 80s, that was Jerry Lewis's MDA
Yes.
telethon,
I
was
can remember that.
always
Yep.
that weekend. And I was watching it with my mother, and they were talking to a boy in a wheelchair, and he looked really sad and dumpy, a little like he was not really excited at all.
Yeah.
And they said he has Friedreich's ataxia, which is what I have.
Okay.
And I lost it because at that time, I was told my case was mild.
Right.
So I thought it was going to be something that would show up here and there, but no big deal. And yeah, then it was, oh, that's my future. And I just, yeah.
When you decided that it wasn't going to define you, what are some of the steps you went through? What are some, what, tell me a little bit about that journey, Jennifer, and tell me how. Because you had mentioned that music was a part of your healing. So talk to me a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
I think I really found solace in music, but I also found an outlet where I could be like everyone else. And you're, and especially with live music, Like you can go to a concert, you're in the dark. And sure, you're seated in a different section, but for the most part, no one's looking at you. They're looking at whoever's on stage. So it was just always something that made me feel like I was part of a group.
And because you were experiencing it with others and fandom, right? That feeling of community. That's nice. That's really good. Yeah. So tell me, you mentioned you, Dave, and you guys have connected a couple of times. Talk to me a little bit more about that.
After that meeting at the world, we saw each other another couple of times afterward, and actually, on my 25th birthday, I went and saw him in Nashville.
Okay.
But again, this is another longer story.
That's okay. I love long stories.
My friend Kevin, who was an agent. Or well, actually now he's still an agent, but he worked at Monterey Peninsula, which was Dave's agency for a long time. And now I lost my train of thought. What was the question again?
You mentioned that you'd seen Dave a couple of times, but that he, there was a bond there that helped you through your journey. And so I was wanting you to tell that.
Yes, we had met backstage at a few shows. I had gone to one show in particular with some friends of mine and Kevin, my friend who worked at Monterey Peninsula, had been planning on doing a fundraiser for me to get a van, and I was really hesitant. Okay, let's go back.
Yeah.
Kevin wanted to do this fundraiser to give me this van, and it fell through. My friend suggested I ask Dave for some suggestions.
Okay.
I was like, I don't know about this. I don't want to be, hey, please, can you do this for me? I didn't want to be that girl.
Okay.
So I was really hesitant. And I asked him if he had any suggestions. And his answer was, we'll figure it out.
Cool.
But I had no idea what that meant. And I was like, is he telling me the truth?
Right.
This is all BS. Why would
Right.
he help me? But it was true.
Wow. What happened?
So the process probably took 2 years. I'm not about that. And I was supposed to go see him at the University of Illinois Champaign
Okay.
Urbana, and my backstage passes were not there. And I called my friend Kevin all upset because I was finally going to ask him,
Yeah.
what does that mean?
Sure.
And he Dave's manager found out that I did not have my passes, and he was upset.
Yeah.
So I'm told.
Okay.
So basically, from then on, it was like in motion. And then about a year later, he called and asked me to find a nonprofit for Dave to donate the money to, and they would buy me the van.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, talk to me about when did you decide you wanted to write a book? And talk to me a little bit about that process, please.
I always wanted to write a book.
Okay.
And it was always in back of my mind. But I just didn't have time, and I wrote little things here and there
Okay.
just for fun.
Yeah.
And then I decided I had to stop working like 10 years ago. And I decided to take a memoir class.
Okay.
And then basically, based on that class, I just kept taking classes. And really dedicated myself the last 5 years to doing this.
Okay.
I wrote almost every single day.
And what did you just learn about yourself by writing?
So much.
Okay.
I learned to give myself a little compassion, and I also learned to give my parents compassion.
Okay.
Because, let's say in theory, I would have written this book in my 30s.
Okay.
Would have been a totally different book. And probably would have relentlessly hammered my parents.
Yeah.
And I do a little, to be honest, this isn't everything's great in our family by any means, but after a while, I was like, I don't, who cares about that stuff? Like, they probably had no idea what to do either, so I can't really fault them for anything. They did the best they could, which, what else can you ask for?
The one of the things that the Maya Angelou talks about, when I knew better, I did better, right? The idea that I think that is a really important to give that grace to your parents. And I don't mean your parents, our parents, all of us,
Yes.
because and there are certainly exceptions where there have certainly been bad parents. And I'm not talking about someone who's abusive, but sometimes parents are just trying to do the best they can. And
Yeah.
I know that I found a lot of peace when I came to grips with that my parents were doing the best they could at the time. And it's easy for me to Monday morning quarterback, But then I look at my teenager, or when he's now an adult, I'm sure I effed him up multiple times too. I did the best I could, but there are times when I'm not that good. So yeah, I get you. Yeah.
Well, and I was having this conversation with one of my old roommates from college. They had their first child when she was 3,
Yeah.
and they had their last child when she was 35. The way you parent is just different.
Yes.
And that was also me being baby of the family.
Sure.
My siblings would tell me, we didn't get that when we were your age.
Sure. Yeah.
No, but our mom was 18 when they had her.
Yeah. And my mom was 19 when she had me. She was not 30 and had three kids. And my dad was in the army, moving around a lot. And you know that she spent a lot of time about her on her own, raising kids. Yeah, it's easy. It's really good to give them that grace if it's possible. Tell us about the book. Tell us where we can find it. And go ahead and give me that. And then we'll go next. Yes.
The book is called My Unexpected Life,
Okay.
Finding Balance Beyond My Diagnosis. It came out in September of last year. It's available on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com, and you can order it from wherever you prefer to buy books.
Good.
Yeah, and check my website
Okay.
is jennifergassner.com.
Okay.
And a cool thing, if you sign up for the mailing list,
Right.
you get the link to the playlist for the book. Because
Nice.
I mention a lot of music.
Yeah. Yeah, I will include the website on the show notes. What's next for you, Jennifer? What do you want to do next?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to write next. I know I want to keep going.
Yeah.
There's always more to learn. I don't know if I'm gonna fictionalize something that ended up on the cutting room floor, or if I might veer into poetry. I don't
Okay.
know yet.
What is one thing you want my listeners to take away from our discussion? What is something you want them to, if nothing else, they remember this?
I just really want people to understand that people with disabilities, their life is not tragic, or it's very to it's very normal, actually. Ability isn't, like I was saying earlier, it isn't all of our existence. Everything is not focused on that one thing. It's only a sliver of who we are. Sorry, my phone is going.
No, that's okay. Awesome. Awesome. That is a great message. Any final thoughts before I ask you the Mary question?
I'm on Instagram and at Jenny G Writes
Okay.
and Jennifer Gassner, author, on Facebook.
All right, and I will include those links to it.
Okay.
So, if you are a fan of Jennifer's and you're checking out this podcast, thank you. She has made you all very proud. She's a joy. I've loved visiting with her. So I end every podcast with the Mary question. And what
Yes.
that is, Jay Armstrong, by the way, is another writer that has a neural disease that has affected his speech and his the in fact, I just did a Google search to make sure you guys didn't have the same thing and you don't. But Jay is now retired. And when he was teaching, he would give his students the lyrics to Thunder Road, and they would study it as if it was a poem, and then he would ask the question, does Mary get in the car at the end of the song? So that is your question, Jennifer. Does Mary get in the car?
I think she definitely gets in the car.
Okay.
I
Why?
could totally picture myself as Mary because I think that, I don't know, there's just something about getting out of your comfort zone and where you grew up. That resonates with me, I think, because I moved to San Diego from Wisconsin. At least that's where I took his lyrics. And I will be honest with you, I'm sure I've heard Thunder Road before, but I haven't really paid attention to the lyrics.
Right.
But this time I looked them up and followed along, and I listened really carefully for at least three times.
Yes.
What a fabulous song!
So that makes me very
Song.
happy. There are people, obviously, it's one of Bruce's most well-known songs. But a lot of my non-Bruce fans have not spent a lot of time with it. And so that's another reason why I asked the question. One, I think it's always interesting if, because it's about 50-50, about half my guests say no, shouldn't get in the car. The other half say yes, she does. And each of them give valid reasons. But I always love when they're not a Bruce fan, they go, wow, this is a really good song. And
Yeah.
yeah, it is. It's really nice.
I mean,
Jennifer. Go ahead.
oh, I was gonna say, I'm a Bruce fan, of course, born in the USA, 80s, that and my sister, Pink Cadillac.
Sure.
A lot of the earlier Bruce stuff, I haven't really
Sure.
dove into, so
That's good. I'm glad. All right. My unexpected life, finding balance beyond my diagnosis.
yes.
It Jennifer Gassner. It's jennifergassner.com. The book is available everywhere you find books. Check it out. Sign up for her mailing list. I just looked. It is a very cool playlist from everything from Lauryn Hill, Soul Asylum. Obviously, Dave Matthews Band, the Soup Dragons, Jellyfish, the Mighty Lemon Drops. She has a little bit of everything. Only thing I didn't see a Bruce song, so I'm gonna have to try to.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna have to push.
Sorry.
I'm gonna have to try to do some politicking to get Jennifer to join a Bruce song. Jennifer, you are welcome anytime coming back. I
Thank
would
you
love
so
to see you.
much.
And
Thank
so this has been a blast. Thank you so much for being here. Listeners, be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for checking out Setlusting Bruce. I hope you enjoyed our discussion of music, and I hope you check out other episodes of the podcast as well. I've spent over 7 years talking to hundreds of music fans from around the world about the power and the magic of music. Please follow me on my socials. I am still on Twitter, aka X, as at Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is at Setlusting Bruce. The show has a Facebook page, and I am still on Facebook as well. I'm part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. My good friend Charles and I talk all things Doctor Who on Next Stop Everywhere. And each week, Lou, Karen, and I talk about Babylon 5 on Last Best Hope for Conversation. And on our JKL Media podcast, we discuss various pop culture topics. I and the show can be reached at setlustingbruce@gmail.com. And it would mean the world to me if you could send feedback on any of the podcasts. Give me your thoughts. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you dislike. Tell me what you want to hear from me. Getting to talk to people about music is a joy, and I hope that these conversations bring you a little joy, a little love, and a whole lot of light.